I'm Carrie Dozer, and this is TGen Talks. Our skin. It's our body's largest organ, yet it's often overlooked when we think about cancer and how to prevent it. Today, we dive into the world of healthcare, medicine, and cutting-edge research with our guest, Dr. Alexander Sekulic, professor in the Integrated Cancer Genomics Division at TGen and director of Dermatology and Translational Research at City of Hope Cancer Center, Phoenix. Dr. Sekulic's work focuses on complex skin cancers, and as both clinical physician and researcher, his work with patients helps guide his work in the lab, developing new drugs to treat various skin cancers. He's led prominent clinical trials, including those that brought the first targeted therapy and the first immunotherapy for basal cell carcinoma to approval by the FDA. Dr. Sekulic, welcome, and thanks for taking some time to be with us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You're a new hire here at TGen and City of Hope. What made you choose to continue your career here with these two organizations?
Well, I'm new and I'm an old rehire, I guess. Okay. I've been actually affiliated with TGen for quite a number of years, working with Dr. Trent and the group that was focusing on the skin cancer research at the time, which is my focus and my area of interest and expertise. And that launched a series of collaborations that have persisted over the years. And I think there is a tremendous opportunity with combined expertise of TGen in terms of research and genomics and omics in general, in partnership with clinical strength and opportunities at City of Hope and the enormous market in the area of the Valley and Arizona in general.
You hold a dual appointment, clinician and researcher. Tell me a little bit about how you divide your time and what those two hats look like that you wear.
Yeah, throughout my entire career, I did both. And the reason is I love interactions with patients. I love medicine seeing the real issues in real life of the patients brings a different insight, different type of insight and different flavor to any efforts to improve health. But just seeing patients is not sufficient. You know, if you really want to push the envelope, you really have to be involved on the research aspect. And that can be in various flavors. In my case, it is both in terms of clinical trials, so developing and studying new types of treatments as well as new types of diagnostic approaches, but also looking really under the hood and looking at the mechanisms that drive the disease and asking, why is it there? What is it there that we could leverage to improve care of our patients?
Did you begin by wanting to wear both of those hats? And if not, which did you do first?
Well, I first went to medical school, and then I pursued a graduate school in immunology and cancer biology. And the reason was, seeing things that I saw in the clinic, there were many, many questions. You know, we're answering and keep answering many questions, but there's a lot more to answer. So that really was the impetus to say, you know, I really want to understand and be part of figuring out how do we do things better rather than just doing them the same way.
Your focus is on complex skin cancers. Before I ask you what that means, could you divide skin cancer into a couple of categories that are most recognizable for us?
Absolutely. So there are many, many different types of skin cancers. But when we talk about skin cancer in general, people will think of several. Melanoma is obviously one, probably the best known and most feared. And then we have those that are more common than melanoma, but not as aggressive typically as melanoma. And that includes basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma. When you look at these, what we call non-melanoma skin cancers, there's a huge burden of disease, meaning numbers of patients in the U.S. These are not mandatory to be reported as new cancers. So the estimates are somewhere in order of 2 to 4 million new cases per year in this country. And then you have squamous cell carcinoma, which is probably around 1 million, maybe a little bit less than that. But again, these are estimates. We don't really have the real numbers.
And do those sometimes develop into melanoma, or do they generally stay in their own lane?
No, they stay in their own lane. So squamous cell carcinoma is usually squamous cell carcinoma. Melanoma is melanoma. They don't cross. Can they change their behavior? Yes. And sometimes we see that. And sometimes we see that squamous or basal cell carcinoma, which typically, in vast majority of cases, if you remove them early on with simple surgery, you're done. But there are cases where they're not gone. And sometimes that's because we did not maybe see or remove the whole thing. But in many cases, I think it's because the actual cancer in a particular patient is different. It's more aggressive than what we normally think of as squamous or basal cell carcinoma.
On to complex cancers. Is that melanoma and others?
So when we talk about complex, particularly the language that has been used, which actually got introduced as we started studying these and doing clinical trials, we would talk about basal cell carcinoma, which is, as I mentioned, typically curable by simple surgical procedures. But when it recurs after surgery and it does not respond, it can turn into what is called locally advanced basal cell carcinoma. That disease is very different because you can't really cure it with surgical methods as you would the rest with the same accuracy. You could get to the next stage as well, from locally advanced to metastatic basal cell carcinoma, meaning a cancer that spreads from the skin where it started growing to distant parts of the body. There is likely some biological difference in those cancers. But the main point is that traditionally we have not had treatments for those types of cancers. So those patients were treated with whatever the flavor of the day was in terms of old chemotherapies. More recently, within the last 10, 12 years, we've done a lot of work studying new types of treatments in particularly basal cell carcinoma, leveraging genomics. And this was one of the aspects of my early involvement with TGen, targeting specific mutated proteins within basal cell carcinoma that act as a switch, light switch, which is stuck in the on position. And the drug that one would want to use is really targeting the switch and turning it off, and in that way cutting off that signal that tells the cancer cells to grow. So that's what we call targeted therapies. And that has been very successful and has been FDA approved. But even among those patients, people will progress, the cancer will progress, and patients will need other options. And that's where next wave of therapies that we worked on was important, which is a set of immunotherapies, therapies that leverage your immune system and unleash the immune system and allow it to attack cancer.
And this is something you've been working on for quite a while.
Yes, so those were very rewarding efforts, bringing those therapies to the FDA approval and seeing, most importantly, how this can change the lives of our patients.
You were intimately involved in their discovery, right? Yes. Are these drugs that are very commonly used now?
Yes, so in a scenario where you have a patient with locally advanced or metastatic non-melanoma skin cancer, particularly basal cell carcinoma, we will use these targeted therapies. That's now a common thing. Luckily, these are not very common cases, but there is a need out there. And when we started this, that question was whether there is even such a thing as metastatic basal cell carcinoma. There was no recognition, right? So I think that this is really has changed the game for patients that do end up suffering from this disease.
Tell me about your work in the area of melanoma.
So I started working in melanoma years ago, and as I mentioned, that was one of the areas of early collaboration with TGen. Melanoma has been a poster child for development both of targeted therapies as well as immunotherapy. One of the significant early efforts that we've had was to say patients with melanoma where targeted therapies do not work. And that's about 50% of melanoma patients, advanced melanoma patients.
That's a lot of patients.
That's a lot of patients. So in those patients, we did not have other options. Immunotherapy was not on the scene yet. So in partnership with TGen and Carmanos Cancer Center, with Dr. Trent and Dr. Pat LaRusso and a large, large team, we had conducted the clinical trial, which was one of the first trials to really look at the sequence of the cancer in order to say, are there any targets in this particular patient's cancer that may be amenable to drugs that we have today? So really bringing that to patients today, That was the goal on the entire journey here.
Many of our listeners live here in Arizona. Obviously, we know the sun shines, it seems like, every day. What do you wish that every Arizonan knew about skin cancers, if you could stand on top of TGen's building and tell everyone?
So I shouldn't generalize, but one almost can generalize in this case and say, without sunshine, there would not be skin cancer. So there's a very, very clear correlation. Sunshine or sun exposure is the most important and best characterized risk factor for development of skin cancer. Does it contribute to all skin cancers? These are the ones that we talked about, melanoma, basal squamous cell carcinoma. Yes, it does. Is it equally risky for everybody? Probably not. And I should say probably, because there is risk for everybody. But if you are blonde, blue-eyed, fair-complected, your risk is significantly higher than somebody who's very dark pigmented, has brown eyes, dark hair. And we're talking on the spectrum of humanity, from somebody, from Iceland to somebody from, Africa. So the skin color is another component that will play into that equation. It is also important to remember that there's a different type of sun exposure that may be harmful. If you have a lot of sunburns, particularly early in life, that sets you up much more for melanoma. The risk for melanoma goes up. Risk for example, squamous cell carcinoma is just the opposite. It's cumulative exposure. It doesn't have to be high-level sunburns, but it's gradual exposure day after day after day. So sun protection is really, really essential.
Here in Arizona, I feel like if we are outdoors at all, it's almost impossible to cover everything. Is it fair to expect us to be able to protect ourselves?
Yeah. And again, I would say, this is all has to be adjusted to an individual, meaning somebody who has had 5 or 10 skin cancers and is light complected and very high risk individual. The level of protection that I would recommend to somebody like that is much different than somebody who's darker and never had skin cancer. But having said that, I think we need to remember that sun protection doesn't mean living in a box. It means avoid the sun when you can. So if you can pick shade versus full sun, pick the shade. If you can use clothing, sun protective clothing when it's sunny, that is a great option. And they're available now almost in grocery stores. And then you can use sunscreen when needed. Hat, sunglasses, of course. So all of those add up. It's just being wise and being consistent with it. I would say sun protection is not a decision that you make when you see the sun outside. It's an approach to your life. When you go out, you're going to sun protect.
You're opening a new center here at City of Hope Phoenix. What will it do? What are its goals?
So we are within City of Hope. Clinically, we're setting up a skin cancer program, which is going to focus on detection, early detection, and treatment of skin cancers. And the goals are to continue really to push the envelope with new clinical trials, to bring new and better treatment options for patients that need that. But it will tie into many other initiatives that we have actually at TGen, and one of which is early cancer detection by using DNA. Being able to do so is important not only for skin cancers, but cancers in general. We know that advanced cancers kill people. Early cancers don't kill anybody. The problem is that we don't detect and treat cancers early. So prevention, early detection, and then development of new therapies is really the trifecta of the goals.
It seems like detecting skin cancer would be far easier than detecting pancreatic cancer or another abdominal cancer, because we wear our skin. It's visible. But it seems like melanomas are often diagnosed in people who don't get sun exposure in that particular place, right? Yeah. Why is it so tricky? What is the deal?
Thank you for that. There are melanomas, but then there are melanomas. Vast majority of melanomas arise on sun-exposed skin and are related to sun exposure. In fact, when we sequence the DNA of most melanomas, we can see specific changes, specific mutations in the DNA of cancer cells that tell us that this cell was, or its precursor, was bombarded by ultraviolet light. We can see the signature of what led to that cancer. However, there are some melanomas that will develop in areas where you don't see the sun. For example, the bottom of your feet. Why are those dangerous? Well, they're dangerous because, one, people do not notice them. Two, people, and sometimes even in medical community, people do not think of melanoma first when something is there, particularly if it's not darkly pigmented.
Right.
Not all melanoma are dark. Melanomas are dark. So that sometimes can lead to delayed detection and diagnosis, and that can complicate the treatment, as we said. The further you go along the path of development, the more challenging the treatment can be.
If you could divide your efforts and your outcomes based on early detection and treatment and pharmaceuticals, better drugs to treat cancers more effectively, where would the balance lie?
That's a tricky question because we're dealing with humans, and I think if you ask me what is the most effective way to decrease the burden of skin cancer, I would say prevention and early detection by far, in that order. However, we know that prevention will not be adopted to the measure that one would like. And we know that screening and early detection is not optimal today. And we still have ways to go to get there. So we will still have this backlog of people that will come up with skin cancer that will need treatment. So ideally, one would want to prevent all of them, but we need to work on all on both sides of the equation.
If there's a most common misconception about skin cancers out there, what is it?
I would probably say two misconceptions. There are several, but I'd highlight two. One, people hear melanoma and panic settles in. We need to remember that a vast majority of melanomas at this point are diagnosed early. 90%+ of melanomas are just removed with a simple surgical procedure in the office and no issue after that. So that's number one. Now, having melanoma, early melanoma, is not something that one should rearrange their whole life around. Number two, well, skin cancer is luck of the draw. You know, I may get it, I may not get it, you know. And similar one is, well, the damage has been done. Well, now if I'm in the sun again, you know. Which is incorrect, because every minute in the sun increases that chance. So even people that have a lot of sun damage, you can always get more if you allow it. So that's, I guess, another misconception. And the third misconception these days, I think, is which is probably the best news, is that once people have advanced melanoma, for example, and now that's, as I mentioned, we have ushered those therapies into non-melanoma skin cancer, squamous and basal. It used to be that there is really no adequate therapy for people with advanced metastatic disease. With onset of new therapies, particularly immunotherapy, that has changed dramatically. I have been seeing patients now for 14 years that have had melanoma everywhere, and they have no melanoma.
Wow.
Right? So does everybody have that type of response? We're not there yet. But do we want to call it a cure? Do we want to call it a long remission? I don't think the individual that had melanoma cares what you call it if melanoma is gone for 14 years, right?
Right.
So I think that's another misconception. Not every advanced melanoma is a death sentence. We now have options for treatment that are very, very different than 10 or 15 years ago.
What's next on the horizon for options for treatment? If you could wave a wand and have three new drugs to treat three particular skin cancers, what would they be?
Yeah, I would say, again, you know, if I had a magic wand, I would probably wave it in the direction of preventing it so we don't need to treat it. But if we're talking about, you know, melanoma, advanced melanoma that needs to be treated and we need new therapies, if I were to show you a graph of the new drugs approved in melanoma space, you would see an accelerated, exponential number of new drugs that are being approved. We mentioned immunotherapy. Mm-hmm. The first wave of immunotherapies were drugs that were targeting what we call checkpoint inhibitors. Complex, you know, mouthful term. But basically what it says is that these drugs target points on immune cells that work like off buttons, mm-hmm. right? If you can use a drug to cover the off button so you can't turn off the immune cell goes after cancer, right? But that's just the first wave of these medications, of these drugs. Newer drugs that we've been also studying recently deploy other methods, such as viruses that are re-engineered to target the tumor cell and at the same time, in a selective way, increase the activation of immune system towards those tumor cells. So, for example, those types of treatments, either alone or in combination with these other treatments, are likely to make a significant difference in how effective we are treating more advanced skin cancers and cancers in general.
With this rate of discovery, why are cancer cells still so good at evading the newest treatments?
You know, when we think of cancer, we think of cancer as a case of evolution in a single body. In other words, for cancer to be a cancer, cancer is a disease of DNA. The way every one of our cells works, your brain cell is different than your skin cell or than your liver cell. It functions in its own lane. The reason why it does is because it has very clear instructions from your DNA what to do and what to be. What happens in cancer, that all of that goes out of the window. So you not only start inappropriately using things from your DNA and behaving in a way that you shouldn't, but that DNA is mutated. So the messages that the cancer center uses to behave change. What that does, it allows it to grow and divide fast, but at the same time, it puts it on a trajectory of constant change, like a virus. What does that mean? Well, it means that where you had one type of cancer cell, over time you're going to have 10, 100, 1,000, million different types. So when you treat something, it may work on 900,999, but it's not going to work on the last little bit. If that last little bit survives and can, you know, grow despite your therapy, that's what's going to give it opportunity to rise. So that is also a beauty of the immune therapies, because with immune therapies, we are not developing, so to speak, one bullet. We are developing an army, essentially, that can recognize things and monitor and surveil.
Anything that I've missed about asking you about your goals here at City of Hope and TGen and what you see happening in your discoveries, in your research, and in your clinical patients in the next 10 years?
I think the probably the biggest thing I would highlight is that there's a tremendous opportunity here with partnering TGen with City of Hope, particularly locally here. And the need for high-level cancer care in Phoenix or in the Valley in general, in Arizona for that matter, is enormous. Having the presence of the two is going to allow us to really take those discoveries, not only take them from the lab into the clinic, but to really jointly build a workforce that's fluent in the language on both sides and direct the work of both clinical work at City of Hope and as well as the research work at TGen to synergize in the most effective way to really bring those therapies and those approaches, whether it's treatment or early detection, to our patients. And the goal is improve the lives of Arizona residents.
That's a good time to live in Arizona, out of the sun, hopefully, at least mostly. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk about what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
For more on TGen's research, go to tgen.org/news. The Translational Genomics Research Institute, part of City of Hope, is an Arizona-based nonprofit medical research institution dedicated to conducting groundbreaking research with life-changing results. You can find more of these podcasts at tgen.org/tgentalks, Apple and Spotify, and most podcast platforms. For TGen Talks, I'm Carrie Dozer.